Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, thank you DJ Q for bringing us back in style. So glad to have you all back. Yes, I am Jay Farmer, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by Spring 44 Vodka. It's the cold, crisp, clear Colorado spring water that makes it the freshest tasting vodka ever, and it's triple distilled. Spring 44, spring for some today. And by Swifties, all American and Irish clubs across our 9987 for a great burger or the ball game, it's Swifties. All right, everybody, we had a really great first half of the show with Bruce Charlton of the Robert Trent Jones 2 Design Group talking about Poppy Hills and Court of All, the latter of which is going to host the U.S. Women's Open next year. Poppy Hills used to be in the rotation along with Pebble Beach and Cypress Point and now Monterey Peninsula Country Club out on the California swing. And for the second half of the show, we got a great return of special guests coming up. If you need a gift for the holidays, oh, have they got the right thing for you. One of the world's great golf course architects and one of the brightest men in the field of golf course architecture and design, please welcome Rand Morissette and Tom Doak. Guys, thanks for coming back on the program.
Glad to be here again, Jay.
It's been a long year. We had you on in the spring. How has your year been?
Mine's been great. I was building a project close to home this year for the first time in 25 years at the Forest Dunes in Michigan. So that meant when I traveled, it was more for fun, and I had a lot of fun doing research for my book this spring and summer.
And you, Ren?
Well, I tell you what, being involved in these books is tough going. We just got out volume 2, as you mentioned, Jay, and already Tom's on us for getting in stuff for chapter 3 or for volume 3, so there's truly no rest in this, but it is fun, the places that you go to, in part trying to do some work for the books. I just returned from upstate New York and saw some really neat courses that, you know, frankly, I might not have gone to if it wasn't for, you know, helping to augment the book.
Yeah, we're, of course, talking about the most quintessential work in the analysis of golf courses, that is The Confidential Guide, which started out as a one-volume book and was a Christmas gift, wasn't it, Tom?
It was. It was. The original version was a gift for my friends in the golf business who had helped me get around and see all these courses when I was in my 20s. I think I wrote it in about 2 months, in the fall of 1988, when I was half as old as I am today. And, you know, and I never really expected that it would be in the public domain at all, much less that it would be as notorious as it is.
Well, it became a bit of a cult favorite, and it's made its way among, you know, many of the golf intelligentsia, especially those that study design and architecture. Rand, would you say that it's possibly one of the most important books written on the topic?
Yes. I mean, you know, what's happened since the book was first published, too, is the transportation has become so much easier. And now you see courses on King Island in Australia, and Tom's opening just opened one in New Zealand. And you have all these mad keen golfers trying to figure out where to go. And to me, based on the fact that Tom has split the first book up into 5 volumes and covers so many more courses, it really is an invaluable travel guide. And, you know, most of us have children and this and, you know, other tugs on our time. And you know, with your finite amount of time for your recreation, for your vacation, you sure want to make sure that you get the best bang for your buck. I mean, nothing worse than going somewhere far flung and finding out, you know, there was a wasted effort. And I think that that's what these books have really helped. They've helped make people much more economical and selective in making wiser decisions in where they go and have fun.
Yeah, as one of my friends puts it in slang, he says, friends don't let friends golf slum. And I have to say that he's absolutely right about that. You know, I felt the same way. I was down in Florida. This was back in 2001. And, you know, I went on this trip. I played these $200 golf courses, and invariably I got frustrated saying, you know, this wasn't worth the money. And then I got home one day, and it was a 6.5-hour round on a New York City public course. And I said, that's it. I'm going to start a website and tell people where to play and where not to play. And 11 years later, we're actually just about right on the 11th anniversary at jflama.com. That's the new name of it now. So, you know, we all share the same passion for great golf courses, but we also share the same passion for great design. And people always ask me, you know, why do some courses stay on top of ranking lists and others debut high and then drop down? And I say, well, that's because, you know, to the true eye of a person who's able to distinguish between a truly great golf course and a really pretty good one, the design feature counts for no less than 2/3. So tell us a little bit about what is the key to telling the difference between how a golf course plays as opposed to how it looks, and why some courses stay high on the list because of their great design features.
Well, it helps to play them first and, you know, be a good enough player to understand how the features on the ground are affecting you, but also have enough imagination to see how they're going to affect other players. I mean, you know, every golfer is really biased toward what works for his game. And if, you know, if I get a bad balance, you know, I think the first reaction is the course is at fault. And you really have to look past that and look how that same feature might have helped you instead of hurt you. And many of them can, if you're just open-minded about how you look at it. You know, there's no way I could have seen as many golf courses as I've seen if I tried to play them all. And, you know, one of the things that helps in being an architect in analyzing golf courses is it's the same thing we have to do when we're building a golf course. I mean, unfortunately, when we're building them, we can't see exactly how the ball is going to bounce. We have to be able to visualize that part. And if you can do that on a golf course in the dirt, you can do it walking around a golf course that's finished.
Have you noticed in your travels this year, both you, Ran and Tom, some emerging trends in either architecture or in maintenance that, you know, have really stood out in your mind as being the way forward in design?
Well, you know, Jay, back to your other question, too, I think you can look geographically at courses. You know, we all know where the game originated along the North Sea, whether it's in the Netherlands or whether it's in Scotland. And you just have certain soil conditions, climate conditions that are conducive to grasses that promote good golf, interesting golf. And when Tom divided up the Confidential Guide into 5 volumes, I was personally very worried about volume 2 because that involves a lot of weather belts, hot, humid places that, you know, that don't necessarily lend themselves to natural golf. Now, there's been a lot of advances in agronomy, so that's less than it's ever been. But a lot of courses start high in rankings because they have a big media push behind them. People go, they start high. But they were always meant to be a residential development. And then when other people go 4, 5, 10, 12 years later and their homes all over the place, you can rest assured that those courses invariably drop down the rankings. And so to your present question, you know, the thing that you've seen take hold since the 2008 collapse is the idea of core golf, you know, not having homes on each side, and I'd say most, you know, welcome return to keeping golf, you know, simple and more pure. And I think it's you know, a lot of good things come from a recession, and that's one of them.
The recession probably did help minimalism and naturalism for that reason, but also because folks like you and Tom have been shining the light on the benefits, both financially from a maintenance point of view and from a playing point of view as well. Tom, you were going to chime in on that same topic that Rand just talked about?
Well, recessions are a mixed blessing in my side of the business. you know, there's a lot fewer opportunities to build new courses that emphasize these features. I think the tide has turned as to what kind of golf courses you see being built now. I mean, even I haven't read a press release for a new golf course in 5 years that didn't use the word minimalism somewhere or other, even from designers who you would have never expected that 10 years ago. But, you know, saying it is one thing, building it is another, and different guys have different ways of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question that that's true. And even more so, if the two of you were to address, say, a big seminar of superintendents or people in charge of maintenance for golf courses, and you could impress upon them three important things, maybe three trends that are happening right now, or three things for them to focus on, what would you try to teach them?
Well, you know, I've talked to superintendent groups in various places around the country over the years, and, you know, in general, golfers should never talk to superintendents. Most of them have much more understanding of golf than we do about what they do. You know, I'll second Rand's viewpoint that, you know, one of the things that's really helped golf courses, particularly in the southern United States and, you know, which is the focus of this second volume of the Confidential Guide, are just improvements in agronomy. I mean, the Ultradorf Bermuda grasses that they use on greens have just totally made moot the idea of growing bent grass greens in places where they don't really work for the sake of having the quote-unquote best grass. I mean, you used to see courses in South Carolina and Georgia and even Florida trying to grow bent grass greens because that's what those members played on in the summers when they were back home in the Northeast. And bent grass in the South is just a train wreck as far as trying to keep it maintained without overwatering it through the summer months. You know, invariably the only good bent grass greens on a southern golf course were the ones that were brand new, because after 3 or 4 years, you know, they'd been watered to death and you were starting to get invasion from other species. You know, with the Ultra Dwarfs, you can have really good, fast, firm greens year-round in the South, and that makes a huge difference in how those courses play.
Rand, your thoughts?
Well, I would certainly, I am not stupid enough to where I would ever tell a greenkeeper anything. In fact, I would always shut up and listen. I would rather listen to what Don Mahaffey has to say on grasses and irrigation than I would listen to probably 90% of golf course architects. I mean, you would just, you would learn so much listening to a guy like that. I was just on the phone with Lynn Curtin, who's the greenkeeper at the George Wright Municipal Course, and I can tell you I learned more in that hour call. It was just an absolute treat to get to talk with people who are out in the field, you know, every day, somebody like a Lynn Curtin. And it's the biggest benefit that I've had in starting Golf Club Atlas is the opportunity and access to talk to and to listen to those people.
Now, Rand, you and I have definitely been running in the same places, but not at the same time, because I also played George Wright this year on the recommendation of several Golf Club Atlas members. Had a wonderful time, enjoyed it a great deal, and thought it was a marvelous example of what a muni should be, and I look right straight at my home in New York City and at the Parks Department, and, you know, I'd love to see them get their rear end together just as well as Boston has got it with George Wright. But this weekend when I was out in San Francisco, I saw another muni that took it to a whole new level, and I was shocked to see that it wasn't included in this edition of the Confidential Guide. That was Presidio. And it really was a marvelous experience in that as you drive in through San Francisco from the airport, there's several hills, and way over on one hill at the very top of it, not quite crowning it, but set in a little bowl, is this gorgeous emerald amidst this mountain. And that's Presidio etched into the side of the hill. And, you know, you get up there, everything's lined with cypress and hardwoods and eucalyptus, but the fairways are remarkably wide. It is not like Olympic Club where it's trees, or at least used to be. You're far enough off the fairway so that the public access golfer has enough room to play the game and even spray the ball a little bit and still not get frustrated. So,
Well, I'm glad I got it right somewhere, because they have been absolute jackals at Sharp Park.
Really? Tell us more, please. What's been happening there?
Tom knows more. I mean, it's an embarrassment how hard the city has fought against letting people go enjoy this course that has Alistair McKenzie bones. I mean, it's an outrage.
Tom, do you have anything to add?
Well, I don't know if what's going on at Sharp Park is all the city of San Francisco's fault. I mean, there's a small, very vocal group of environmental people in California that are just dead set against the idea of playing golf out there, to the point that they've, you know, they wanted the whole course closed over a snake that was never there until they built a golf course, and the golf course accidentally created a great habitat for the snake. So now they want the golfers off the golf course, even though the snake's been doing just fine with golfers around. It's, you know, California is a strange place in that regard. I mean, I know that, you know, they've had decades of lawsuits over this thing, and they finally got all of the existing lawsuits resolved, and there is some money waiting in the wings to try to get the golf course restored as much as possible if they can get through all the court battles and make sure that they're not throwing money down the sewer because somebody else will take the golf course away later on. I'm glad to hear about Presidio. You know, when I spent most of my time in California, it was still a golf course for the generals on the military base there, and not a public golf course at all. But I know that Armin Suni, who was superintendent at Cherry Hills way back when and was at Shadow Creek for a while, has been involved there, so I'm not surprised to hear that it's in really good shape.
It was a lovely time out there, and while we're talking about golf in the region, let's also talk a little bit about one that you selected for your 18 favorite flavors in Volume 2, and that's California Golf Club of San Francisco. And let's talk a little bit about Poppy Hills, which you haven't seen yet, but I just saw. So I saw Cal Club, as it's known to its friends, while I was out at the U.S. Open and Olympic Club in 2012. And the work by Kyle Phillips had just gotten done. And it had literally just reopened. And I agree with you both. Visually, it is a masterpiece. The bunkering is majestic. The setting is absolutely gorgeous. The air is like wine. And the angles are brilliant. I raise an eyebrow a bit at this no tee markers thing, because my playing partner and I got lost. You know, and they told me in the clubhouse, they said, watch out, you don't go the wrong way on hole number 7. You'll be playing down 14th fairway by accident. And sure enough, yours truly would listen to direction end up doing that. But the thing that stood out the most was that by 11 a.m. Pacific, the greens had taken on that purple sheen. They were so hard and so fast that 8 members at least cornered me and said, please write about it. We love the golf course. We think it's fantastic and beautiful. But they have it too hard, they said. And I can attest to hitting wedge shots that landed a foot from the cup and rolled 25 feet away. However, some people also said that it could be attributed to the fact that the greens were so new. So tell us a little bit about your trips out to Cal Club and how things are looking now in 2015.
Well, I would just say, you know, any course can do a bunker project and have the bunkers look good and take down trees and open up views. But why the Cal Club's so special is they went 3 feet underground and got the drainage right. They brought in the sand, and so they have these wonderful fast-running fescue fairways. It's just a total game-changer for, you know, most golf in this country, and it was an expensive undertaking, but it's the substructure that is truly world-class, and then along with everything that's layered and that the eye can see, but it's getting the substructure right that was an enormous undertaking. And I don't know what those people are talking about. I mean, you look at a green like the 2nd or the 17th, you can always bank shots in and use the short grass to your advantage. So, I mean, unless the greens were stimping too fast, there's no such thing to me as too firm.
And I'll second that part. And I do understand what Rand's talking about with all the money they spent on the infrastructure there. And I always want to sound a note of caution when I hear stories like that, because not every club can afford to spend $5 million underground to fix things before they start building the golf course. If it was all, you know, if we relied on that, there would be no more new golf courses. I envy the Cal Club for being in the position to do that, but, you know, most of us build golf courses that can't afford to do that kind of work if they're going to survive and thrive. You know, places like George Wright or places like Forest Dunes, where I just was. I mean, we spent $3 million building a brand new golf course from top to bottom. And that's the kind of project you have to build nowadays.
Yeah, and I will throw in that it happened to be U.S. Open week when I was out there. And technically, U.S. Open week, almost every golf course across the country wants to get a little bit harder to show off things a little bit.
The Cal Club only gets harder by being harder, as in firmer ground. There is virtually no rough, so it's not like they narrowed the expanse of fairways. It's just the ball keeps running and running, which, frankly, to me is a delight. And I think 90X% of the members would agree with that.
It was a remarkable job they did there. Wonderfully wide fairways and fantastic angles. I will agree with you, Rand and I. We once had a discussion about Cal Club versus Olympic Club, and I will agree with you that the design of Cal Club and the bunkering are stronger and more interesting than Olympic Club. But I will champion Olympic Club in one respect. I'm very much enamored of reverse camber as a defense in golf course architecture because it is eminently natural and it tests both accuracy and distance control. It's one of the reasons why the second guy, the plotter, tends to win U.S. Opens at Olympic Club. But again, it isn't tricked up. It isn't manufactured. You know, there's quirky interesting and quirky weird, like we talked about before. Quirky weird being a mold around a green, quirky interesting being, like you said just now, Rand, wonderful bumps and humps in the fairways and undulations. So what are your thoughts comparing and contrasting Cal Club's experience to, say, Olympic Club's?
Well, I would say of any course in the world, I get why a really, really low handicap golfer might love Olympic more than, say, a 7 or an 8 handicap golfer. I'll never forget Lee Jansen's victory speech where he said how mentally exhausting it was having to hit a draw on the 4th hole, a fade on the 5th hole, trying to hold these reverse camber fairways by hitting the correct shape shot, and things that a you know, a plus two, three, four handicap golfer can do and attempt to do on an alternating basis that's beyond the ability of a seven handicap golfer. My allegiance goes to the Cal Club, though, just in part because I always like expansive playing fields, number one, but then it's situated on a windy part. The sloping terrain is such that the wind really hits it. So you have that additional component to the golf that to me means you're getting more than just one golf course when you play there. It's always rotating. One day it could be a driver of 5-iron into the first hole, and the next day, you know, you could be laying up with a 3-wood. And that's just the advantage of wind.
Tom, your thoughts, and then we're going to go to break.
Oh, this is when I have no dog in that fight. I've always been partial to San Francisco Golf Club over either of them, and especially since I've been working there the last 10 or 12 years. you know, I admire the other two golf courses, but I don't have any doubt where I'd rather play if I had a day in San Francisco.
Well, I tell you what, everybody, we are splitting hairs between the truly magnificent and the really, really, really great here. You know, we're splitting hairs between 10s and 9s and maybe the odd 8.5. So we're going to take a very short break, everybody. We're going to leave you in the very capable hands of DJ Q. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Poppy Hills and Old Town and some other trends in architecture like shaving all the rough and really wide fairways. And, of course, we'll have the trivia question, too. So DJ Q is going to take you for 1 minute. I'm Jay Forma. You're listening to Jay's Plays on Golf News Net Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back in the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on Golf News Net Radio Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.